Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Okay. Yeah. We are back. You are live here on the Boxing Radio, Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, James Bell, boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Sports. Check out the Cold Hard Sports website, thechonsports.com, for boxing articles and other articles dealing with various sports, such as college football, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and NASCAR, among others. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539 to get on queue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We will be getting into it in a few minutes here, but we are going to go through a couple of commercials and then get right into it. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcell Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists. And guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
All right, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Video Show. Number to dial in 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Get on cue, talk live on the show. All right, we are here on Sunday, September 4th, 2016, and we're pretty much, you know, getting out of, you know, the first two-thirds of the year 2016. We've, you know, gone through a few marquee fights here and there over the course of those 8 months, and usually in the month of August, we pretty much have like a lull in between until things get picked back up in the month of September. You know, in the previous years, we've had, you know, marquee fights in the month of September. Of course, Floyd Mayweather Jr. has had many fights, marquee fights in the month of September, culminating last year with his last fight against Andre Berto. But, you know, now since he is out of the fight game, we pretty much have, you know, other people basically taking his place as far as, like, you know, marquee guy in the sport of boxing, and also, you know, other fighters that are trying to make their name within the sport in a large scale. We have a few fights coming up in the next couple of weeks, specifically next week, that's dealing with the middleweight division. As on Friday, we have a middleweight fight going on as Daniel Jacobs will be going up against Sergio Mora for the WBA regular title belt. This is a rematch of a fight that, you know, happened last year, as, you know, Daniel Jacobs defeated Sergio Mora back in August 1st over at the Barclays Center, getting a TKO victory, and that was a, you know, a back-and-forth fight between those two. Sergio Mora got knocked down, you know, or early in the first round, and then, you know, after that, Daniel Jacobs tried to be a little bit more aggressive to try to finish things off early. And then got caught himself and was dropped to the canvas before the end of the first round. And then it seemed like in the second round that Daniel Jacobs scored another knockdown. But apparently Sergio Mora suffered a leg injury, a major leg injury, that put him, you know, that put him out for that fight, and basically put him out of commission in the ring for, you know, at least 6 to 8 months. So, with him being out 6 to 8 months, he wasn't able to fight. I guess when he came back, he pretty much, you know, requested to, you know, go at it once again with Daniel Jacobs, and Daniel Jacobs obliged. So, over in Reading, Pennsylvania, on Friday night, we will have another fight between these two guys with Daniel Jacobs' regular title belts on the line. You know, this is a fight for Daniel Jacobs. He, you know, is a guy that, you know, only has that one loss to his record that he suffered. And, you know, he's looking to try to prove himself as the best middleweight in the sport. A lot of people, or a lot of publications, actually have him, you know, amongst the top two, with Gennady Golovkin being at number one. You know, with that being, you know, with that being said, you know, it seems like Daniel Jacobs still looks like he was trying to, you know, prove to, you know, other, you know, prove to the world that he is the guy that is the number one middleweight out there. even with that single loss that he had, TKO loss that he had to Dmitry Payrov back in 2010, he has not lost since. And he was able to, you know, get the WBA regular middleweight title against Gerard Fletcher back in 2014, and he has defended it ever since. And now he's, you know, looking to get this other fight here against Sergio Mora over in Reading, Pennsylvania with the rematch. Now, Sergio Mora, of course, as y'all know him from the Contender fame, and you know that he's had other significant fights over the course of his career, pretty much going back to, of course, the Contender days against E.J. Smith and, you know, fights against Peter Manfredo Jr., Vernon the Viper Forrest twice, as he won a majority decision to win the Super Welterweight belt, but then lost it in the rematch and didn't fight again for a little while. Then came back in the game, drew in the fight against Sugar Shane Mosley. And, you know, it's basically been kind of, you know, losing here and there in fights. He lost, you know, two fights against Brian Vera after his loss against Vernon Forrest. And then, of course, that TKO loss to Daniel Jacobs. So you do have those two or those losses that are on Sergio Mora's record, but he's trying to get back into it to see if he can defeat Daniel Jacobs and win this WBA regular middleweight championship. Now, we have somebody on the line here, area code 813. What's going on with you?
Jay Beasy, what's going on? This is Terrell calling from Tampa, checking in.
How you doing there, brother Terrell?
Everything good, everything good. What's going on with your show?
Man, yeah, just getting back into the show a little bit. You know, had a week hiatus. You know, nothing really was, you know, going on in the sport of boxing, you know, as far as fights are concerned. But we're pretty much getting, you know, into it here coming up this week. Actually started up earlier as we had, like, one fight in the Super 5-weight division. I'll be able to get into it a little bit later. But right now I'm talking about this fight that's going to be on Spike TV. I am Reading, Pennsylvania, with the WBA regular championship on the line. Daniel Jacobs, the Miracle Man, against Sergio Mora in the rematch. So, if you can have a take on it real quick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a fan of goodness. I'm sorry, man. I've been out of the loop for a minute with boxing. Mora, what's Jacobs? I've been a fan for Jacobs for quite some time. And we talked about him in depth on the show before. He's one of those people that I would like to see a lot more from. I would like to see him emerge as a top, I don't even want to say contender. I want to say as a top title holder in the 160, 168 division. You know, he has a frame to go up to probably 168, but he needs to, I don't want to say prove himself, but he needs some. But for this fight with Mora, the second fight, I want him to emphatically say, I'm here, and I'm a force to be reckoned with in this division, all right? And for that to happen, of course, he needs to go out and fight the fight that we want to see. You know, Mora is a tough, wily veteran at this point, a guy with I think Mora's brought him 6'1", 6'2", but he has a thin frame. But for Jacobs, I want him to go out and assassinate this guy and blow him out the water and announce his presence like, I am a force at 160 to be reckoned with. So you guys are always talking about Triple G, so talk about me too. But in order for that to happen, he needs to go out and do the work. Like I said, Moore's been around for a while. I remember, like I said, back when he came on the Contender Series. To me, the work that all the stuff he's done, I'm still surprised because he's not a power puncher. By any means, he's just pretty much a slick, wily veteran at this point. But he's managed to survive. I mean, how long ago was that Contender Series? That Contender Series, that was like a good 4, 5, 6 years ago. And he's still relevant.
Man, that was like more than that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's still relevant. So that says a lot for him. His ability to survive and hone his game, stay in shape, inside the ring, outside the ring, trouble, which we see all the time. How many times before have we seen outside issues derail someone's career, you know? But he's managed to stay relevant, so kudos to him for that. But like I said, this fight to me is more about Danny Jacobs. I want him to blow him out of the water because I think that – I'm not saying Danny Jacobs can be one of the best in the world, but perhaps I do. Perhaps I do think that of him. But we'll know those questions going forward next week, so I can't wait to see it. Cannot wait to see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'll be looking at is, you know, see if Daniel Jacobs is, you know, ready to make a statement against Sergio Moore, especially with Sergio Moore coming in his first fight back from that leg injury that he suffered there at the Barclays Center. Jacobs just has to say, okay, this Sergio Moore is not better than me. I'll come in there, I'll blow him out, I'll take him out, and I'll make a statement that I am the guy in the middleweight division. Not Gennady Golovkin, you know, not these other guys, David Lemieux or anybody. I am the guy in the middleweight division. And so, you know, what he's got to do is he's got to step out there and make that statement and prove to the world that he should be the guy that should be number one. And, you know, pretty much force the World Boxing Association's hand as far as making the fight between him and Gennady Golovkin by the end of the year. And I'll see if I'll, you know, get into that a little bit when, you know, I get it, you know, preview this next fight that's going to be on the next day over there in England. Do you have, like, anything else in reference to you know, Daniel Jacobs and his, you know, fight here against Sergio Moore?
Well, no, just you said this fight's going to be in New York, right?
No, this fight is going to, this fight card is actually in Reading, Pennsylvania here on September 9th. And actually, you know, we have another, you know, fight that's a co-feature, which is for the vacant IBF World Lightweight Champ title. Where undefeated Richard Comey will be going up against Robert Easter Jr. And, you know, Robert Easter Jr. is, you know, a guy that, you know, I pretty much saw back in August 1st in the D.C. Armory against Janice Mendez, where he basically scored a TKO victory in that one.
Well, not a whole lot more for Jacob's opportunity. I mean, like I said, at this point, the world is right there in order for him to snatch it up. You know, it's going to say a lot about who he is and what his desires are, and his ability to communicate those desires in the ring. That's what we want to see. You know, it's his time. I mean, the business is right there. It's the world's right there for the taking. Like I said, for him to grab relevancy at middleweight and point to point, go to the forefront of his division. So it's right there. I mean, I forget how old Moore is at this point versus – well, tell me, how old are both guys at this point?
Well, Daniel Jacobs there is at 29, and Sergio Moore is, you know, up there at 30 – actually, he's 35. He turns 36 in December.
Yeah, and considering that, 29, that's definitely can be the prime of Jacob's career. 35, by no means is old in the sport. Same time, one fight can make you look old very, very fast. I mean, how many times have we seen a fighter had been a contender, had been a name for quite some time? Look at Robert Guerrero. He's been, you know him as the Ghost. He earned that nickname for a reason, you know. But I'm trying to think what fight for him that made him basically look old at this point and shot. I mean, he's I won't say he shot. Well, actually, at this point, you can say shot. But when Guerrero lost that last fight, what was it, a couple weeks ago, too, I forget the opponent's name because that guy was definitely not expected to beat Guerrero, and yet he did. But, like, with in comparison to Jacobs Mora, if he gets blown out of the water, he could look old right away, you know. once
right,
again,
exactly.
Morris and Jacobs Court.
Yeah, it's true. So, yeah, I'm going to be looking and watching intently with that, you know, particular fight that's going on there between those two. And then that next day, I pretty much had to, you know, lock down and pretty much confirm that this is going to be a, you know, in the afternoon or not, because it's over in England. But we have, you know, over the O2 Arena in Greenwich, London, the fight between Kell Brook and Gennady Golovkin. This, you know, this fight was set up between Tom Lawler and Eddie Hearn. We talked about it over the past, you know, month and a half or so. You know, basically ever since the fight was announced, pretty much questioning it. You know, we've had updates on, you know, guys' 30-day weights are and, you know, what their 7-day weights are coming in. But, you know, for the time being, I mean, it looks like this fight is a go. And as of now, we have three of the middleweight championships that Gennady Golovkin holds will be on the line. But the WBA made the decision that the middleweight super championship that Gennady Golovkin holds will not be on the line in this fight. They made the decision that with Kell Brook basically not, being in the being in the middleweight division pretty much before this fight, that they are taking this belt out from this particular match to be defended. So that's the only one belt that's not on the line. They declined to sanction that middleweight belt as the president, Alberto Jesus Mendoza, said that the committee and the presidency had not agreed to sanction this bout because Brook never fought as a middleweight. And I had a little video segment, you know, about this once I, you know, got a note of this announcement, and it pretty much raised the question that, you know, with the WBA saying that they're not, having this be sanctioned as a title fight, why don't the other multiple boxing organizations follow suit, you know? So that's going to be pretty interesting to see if, you know, any of these boxing organizations make a decision to say if their titles are going to be on the line. So I want to see if you want to say something on that real quick before I get, you know, more in-depth about it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And, you know, just relative inactivity that we had for the last week or two in terms of major fight, major news, and in boxing, it's been worth the wait just to talk about this fight. I mean, there's so many different angles that you can speak about, including that one that you just mentioned in regards to the WBA not sanctioning their title. And that's a great thought you follow up with in regards to stating that why aren't the other sanctioned organizations doing the same thing? But as we know, for years and years, boxing is unregulated to a degree. Each organization does pretty much what they want to do. And I'm emailing that thought. I'm trying to think of a previous occasion where one organization did something and they all other followed suit. Outside of like saying the box is not medically clear or something like that, you know. But that's certainly a great point that the WBA is saying, hey, we said, and it's true. I mean, on the surface, Brook has never fought as a middleweight, never has, and like and from that point, he's not in any type of rankings at all. And from that point, he's essentially leapfrogging other people in that division and fighting right for a title. So is that right? No, but we know that in boxing, money walks and bullshit talks. That's how it is, plain and simple. And this fight is definitely about money. So it's been about the money that's being generated for the fighters and also for the organizations as well with the section of fees. So that's a very interesting topic.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah, I think the thing is that these boxing organizations are, you know, basically mulling over, you know, if they want to sanction the fight, and if they sanction the fight, then, you know, whoever, you know, wins this particular match has to pay the sanctioning fees in order to keep the belt. But if not, then they, you know, basically just have to decline and push it off, and then whoever wins that fight has to defend those middleweight titles on the next fight, or basically Gennady Golovkin basically keeps the belts, because with, you know, Golovkin not being able to defend the WBA middleweight super championship, they, you know, the WBA will basically just tell Gennady Golovkin that he has to defend it in his next fight, which, you know, leads to the news speculations that they're trying to mandate him fighting against Daniel Jacobs if Daniel Jacobs wins his fight against Sergio Moro. Just trying to see what else is on that particular slate on that card, with it being in the United Kingdom. They do have an IBF Bantamweight Championship on the line there, with Lee Haskins going up against Stuart Aller. Most of these fights are, you know, guys that are pretty much England fighters. So, you know, Eddie Hearn with National Boxing is, you know, kind of putting that whole card together. So, featuring a lot of those guys from England. But also on the 10th, of September, there's supposed to be another fight. Actually, it's going to be in Inglewood, California. And we're going to have a good fight here between the WBC Super Flyweight Champion, Carlos Quadras, and he will be fighting Roman Choquecito Gonzalez. Both of these guys are undefeated. Carlos Quadras is the WBC World Super Flyweight Champion. Roman Gonzalez is the WBC World Flyweight Champion. And so, you know, a good number of people are going to be having their eyes on this, you know, fight. As, you know, a lot of folks are calling Quadras the best guy in the Super Flyweight division, while there's another guy that may, you know, while others may disagree and say that there's another guy that is number one guy at the Super Flyweight division, but you have Roman Choquecito Gonzalez, who is considered by many to be the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. So there will be a lot of eyes on this particular fight, as you'll see if Roman Gonzalez can step up to the challenge to fight somebody like the level of Carlos Quadras moving up in weight. So just want to get your quick take on Choquecito Gonzalez stepping up to fight Carlos Quadras. Hold on, you're on? Yo, it seems to roll was on.
Yeah, I'm on. Sorry, right. I'm distracted.
Yeah.
About that. Can you just your last thought, please?
Yeah, I was trying to see if you would talk about the fight between Carlos Quadras and Choquecito Gonzalez.
Yeah, this is a different fight to look forward to, and the little bit that I've read at this point, Choquecito's opponent is a tough guy. James, I'm sorry, give me a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just gonna see here. We're just getting into this thing here between Carlos Suarez and Roman Gonzalez. And to me, I'm thinking that, you know, the winner of this fight between Quadras and Gonzalez may be in line to fight Dariola in a way, who basically won his fight earlier today. Dariola in a way was able to win his fight there. Defend his title. And he is the guy that is considered as, you know, somebody who may be the number one guy in the super flyweight division. So, you know, I would be looking at seeing if he is going to be fighting the winner of this fight between Carlos Quadras and Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. Be on the lookout for that. Just seeing Chilo, are you back?
Yeah, just briefly. Sorry to hold you up, but we're looking for Chocolatito to come in and do what he does and show power that no one else in that division has at this point, and that's shown. Looking for him to go in and get a good win. I'm sorry if I'm summarized for that for right now. I'm sorry about that.
That's true. I was just looking at this whole thing here with, that thing with Carlos Quadras and Chocolatito Gonzalez. And like I was saying, Nadia, in a way, was able to win his particular fight against Karim Joe Fiendler. I think I got that name right. He was able to win that fight by KO earlier today. He would be ready to basically fight the winner of these two. In a way, basically, I think he like jumped right into it. He was able to win a light flyweight championship, basically on his sixth professional fight, and then went from light flyweight to super flyweight and won the titles at super flyweight. With that being known, that was something that, you know, other people were talking about and looking at as, you know, being a high-profile fight from the winner of Carlos Quadras and Raymond Gonzalez would fight Nogueira in a way for the that particular belt. You had anything more on that?
I do not.
All right, cool. We're just basically moving on here. Fast on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, now we, you know, basically covered the these fights that are happening on September 9th and September 10th, and you know, pretty much just going forward to September 17th, as you know, September 17th has, you know, another, you know, kind of a high-profile fight there, as Saul Canelo Alvarez will be going up against Liam Beefy Smith for Smith's WBO Super Welterweight Championship there, and this is going to be in Jerry's World in Arlington, Texas. The HBO pay-per-view. And know, with it being on HBO pay-per-view, that it'll just be a showcase there for those guys. And also they have a co-feature, Gabe Rosado versus Willie Monroe Jr. So that's going to be something there to be on the lookout for, is that one. I'm really more intrigued about this Gabe Rosado Willie Monroe Jr. fight because, it's a middleweight fight. It's something where, you know, Gabe Rosado could have fought somebody like he could have fought Billy Joe Saunders as part of the undercard, but, you know, ended up not doing that. He ends up fighting Willie Monroe Jr. Of course, you know, these are two guys that have, you know, fought a couple of notable fights, guys that fought and lost against Gennady Golovkin. I think this one here is probably a fight, you know, to try to get one of those guys back into the middleweight game. And so I'm actually more interested in that fight than the main event. I think that, you know, Canelo Alvarez will be able to defeat Smith here. So I'm not really, you know, seeing if I'm that much intrigued with that. Just seeing here, what do you got as far as the like those two fights are concerned?
Well, first of all, I was not aware of the fact that Rosado had signed to fight Willie Monroe, and that's just a great fight for those two levels, those two guys on that level. I think I want to say that Rosado has a more firmer level of toughness than Willie Monroe, but nevertheless, I'm glad to see he got a fight. You know, we know he's seeking to get a fight with Billy Joe Saunders, which not materialized for him for whatever reason. You know, so I'm glad to hear about that fight. In regards to the Canelo's Smith fight, even rolling back to the Triple G Cale Brook fight, along that, with those similarities between those two fights, because we know that Canelo fought Khan several months ago, and we know that Khan moved up two weight classes to fight him. And now here you have the same thing with Triple G fighting Cale Brook. And, of course, same thing with Brook moving up a couple classes to fight him as well. So those two fights are very – the two situations are similar, you know, if not the same. And it's been so funny to hear different fighters weigh in on that topic. And not to mention the fact of I was looking at social media this week, and someone spliced together a nice clip of Triple G, and you know about this, where Triple G said at some point in time in the past that Brook is too small, and now they're fighting, which is like hypocrisy in a sense, you know. But I've read a couple articles where I think it was Martin Murray who fought Triple G. He said he doesn't see the fight going no longer than six rounds at the most. As I recall, the Canelo Khan fight, I believe, went six rounds. It's so funny because Triple G's side is talking up the fight. Oh, Brooks, he's a good fighter. He's a great fighter. He's really the same size. And, like, once again, they're trying to lull the public into believing this is a doable fight and a fight on the same level. And we're about to find out very, very soon on what it really is. But I'm trying to think who else weighed in on the fight, the Triple G fight. I think what's the retired Brit's name? Super Middle. He had a thought about it too. Pretty much echoed the same sentiment.
Oh, you mean Carl Frosch?
Yeah. What was his comments on regards to the Triple G fight and Brook?
You know, don't have it like right off the top, but I mean, I think he pretty much, I think he said that he was basically disappointed. Last thing I got was from something that a couple weeks ago, you know, that he was disappointed with them, you know. But You know, I think it was in reference to him making a you know, a rating as far as like his pound for pound, and you know, he kind of like put Gennady Golovkin, you know, a little bit, you know, a good number, significantly lower than what most publications put Gennady Golovkin at pound for pound as, and I think that was because of you know, what you know, he was, you know, what he's done over the course of his career so far. So I think that's what, you know, that was, that's what that entailed, that, that it was something in reference to, like, the pound-for-pound ratings. Like, a lot of people talk about pound-for-pound ratings, and, you know, somebody, I guess somebody asked Carl Frosch about it, and he kind of, like, rated Gennady Golovkin below, you know, what most people put him at.
Yeah, but like I said, just even with the Canelo Leon Smith fight, I think most people inside the industry certainly expect for Canelo to secure this title, and just once again, just it's still funny because you have a middleweight title. You vacated. Well, I mean, we don't need to go into reasons why. We've discussed that a million times. But you vacate the title, and now you're going back down to 54, fighting for that title.
Yeah,
it's so funny. And even along this whole narrative of that, Canelo keeps saying, "I need to grow into 160." And it's so funny. It's like you had a title at 160.
Well, I mean that whole thing is they're playing games. They're playing games, you know, in reference to that. Because they know, you know, they know what Gennady Golovkin is really out there for. He's really out there to get the money. And they know that, you know, he is that Canelo is the most lucrative fight for anybody to get in the sport right now is against Saul Canelo Alvarez. And so with Canelo Alvarez basically holding all the cards in reference to that, then he's like saying, well, you know, I've fought, you know, Floyd Mayweather. I've fought Shane Mosley. I've fought Arislan De Lara. I've fought Austin Trout. I fought Miguel Cotto. You know, I fought all of these guys here over the course of my career, moving, you know, over here at, you know, 154 pounds and, you know, defeat Miguel Cotto to win the WBC middleweight championship. So, but, you know, in comparison to you, what have you done over the course of your career? What is your most lucrative fight? You know, up until this point, going up against Kell Brook, you know, he really hasn't had, you know, anybody, you know, there, you know, because he had that fight against Kell Brook, and before that he had the fight against the guy from Canada.
I think the guy's name. Lemieux.
Lemieux, yeah, David Lemieux. He said David Lemieux. So, you know, other than that, he really hasn't had, you know, much of a notable resume to say, hey, I can, you know, basically call the shots here. So, you know, why not say, hey, I should be able to get this money? Gennady Golovkin has not done enough to warrant that. So so he has to do a little bit more work here. And this fight against Kell Brook is basically his saving grace, because this is the actual biggest biggest fight that he would probably have as far as like pay-per-view goes. And that's because of Kell Brook and Eddie Hearn bringing it over to London in order to make that happen. It isn't because of Gennady Golovkin. Golovkin doesn't really have, like, any place where he could go to, you know, have his quote-unquote home to bring opponents to, and every time he brings them there, it would be a big fight. This isn't like, you know, Floyd Mayweather or, you know, Manny Pacquiao or, you know, Canelo Alvarez or, you know, these guys before them. He's not at that level yet. He hasn't really been close to that level yet. So now here he is here against Kell Brook. And, you know, after this fight against Kell Brook, you know, what else is he going to be able to do? You know, he'll have that fight for, you know, the defend his middleweight belt if he's able to win against Kell Brook. But, you know, other than that, what else does he have, you know?
So, I tell you what, I have a question for you. From Canelo's side, do you think the reason for all of his positioning and his moves that he's making is that largely to control the money distribution for a Triple G fight? So is it about the money, or is it about the more of the fear of taking the fight itself, about possibly taking a loss? Which one do you think it is?
I would say it's more about the money. I don't see it being something to where it's that he's fearing, you know, losing. Because win or lose, Canelo's still gonna be the money guy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, other than, because if Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez end up fighting each other, and let's say that Gennady Golovkin wins the fight, what's his next high-profile fight that he could have? I mean, people were talking about him against Andre Ward, but that door is basically closed now.
Yeah.
Unless he can fight Chunky DeGale.
Yep.
You know,
and just one thing that, and just along the same thought, I definitely agree with you that this is more about all the positions, about controlling the money for this fight, vacating the belt, picking another fight, talking up the fight, meeting to even discuss doing the fight and then not doing the fight. To the casual boxing fan, there will be perception out there that Canelo is scared to fight Triple G. But like I said, that when you look inside, that's not the reason why his positioning. It's simply to control the fight and emphatically make the point, like you stated, what have you done? Look at your resume compared to mine. You know, like I said, Triple G simply has not done enough. Of course, you got all these knockouts, high knockout percentage, great. But who have you done it against? I won't say limited competition, but you definitely have not fought the best like Canelo has. And I'm trying to think of a fight that I mentioned a while back, but even with Canelo himself, just because you take one loss does not mean you're done, because obviously Canelo has a loss against Mayweather, and look what.
Right.
Now he's in position to be the he's now a cash cow boxer, you know. So just to say, even if he did take a loss against Triple G, he's still going to be in the same position, you know. I mean, just because you can't have a loss, you're not done. Like I said, to the average man, it will be perception out there that he's scared to fight Triple G, but that's not the case. So it's simply about making the right business moves and decisions to ensure that your fighter gets the lion's share of this money when it does happen. It's just a shame that we wait and wait and wait for this news to be done. But that's once again, that's the sport of boxing. That's the business of boxing.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that there's a lot of fans out there that don't necessarily understand that. And with Canelo being a guy that's under Golden Boy, Golden Boy pretty much pulled the same thing, against Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins was the guy that held all the belts, and actually he won all of the belts. He didn't get no interim belt. He wasn't, like, handed it to him because he was a mandatory or something like that. He earned those belts, defeating the likes of, Antoine Echols, Keith Holmes, and then Tito Trinidad. So, I mean, he earned his keep. And then you had Oscar De La Hoya that moved up to the middleweight division to basically get a, controversial decision to win the WBO belt. And, you know, after he did that, they, you know, kind of, you know, had him with the WBO belt, but he was the money man. So he told Bernard Hopkins, hey, if you want to have this fight, you know, with me to have, you know, this last belt, you have to, you know, agree to this contracted weight and, you know, cater to the demands of me first before, you know, you're able to, you know, get this, you know, this title fight. And, you know, he was, Hopkins was able to accept and, you know, was able to defeat Oscar De La Hoya by knockout. And, you know, that was that. So, for him to, for somebody like Gennady Golovkin to not basically cater to the demands of Canelo and his team, pretty much like says a lot.
Yeah, even with that, Trivia even made another foul statement this week, I believe it was, where he said that somehow when 2017 arrives, Canelo's going to find yet another reason to delay the fight for it not to happen. And you know what, at this point, he needs to shut up because, like I said, right, the main thing that we just discussed, his records, his quality of opposition speaks for itself. It's not about being scared. It's not about that. It's political, but like I said, it's by mind. It goes back to the list of opponents that he's fought, you know. But, I mean, once again, all in all, I mean, I hope the fight does get made. It's just a matter of when. And me personally, I would be a bit perturbed if we're forced to wait until September of next year for this fight. You know, because like I said, we expect for Canelo to take out Liam Smith coming up here within a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. We certainly expect that. That would give him a belt at 154. What would be immediately next for him? That would be in September. Would he fight again this year? I'm not sure.
Well, here's what the plan may be. And I kind of like read into this too. You know, the thing here with when Canelo fought Floyd was you know, a WBC super, what was it, WBC welterweight champion. But he also had fought, I think he had fought, I think he fought Cotto beforehand. So, you know, he's done it to where he's floated in between, you know, those things where he was the welterweight champion, and then he went up in his next fight to fight for the super welterweight championship. He did it in 2006 and 2007. When, you know, he was able to fight Zab Judah, which was supposed to be for the undisputed welterweight championship, but couldn't be because Judah lost. And then he fought Valdemir after that to be the lineal champion at welterweight. And then he finally got that money fight against Oscar De La Hoya, which was for the WBC super welterweight championship. And then the next fight after that, he defended the welterweight title. And then yet again, in 2011, he fought for the WBC welterweight championship and won. Then that next year, he fought Miguel Cotto for the super welterweight championship. There and won that, and then went back down again, welterweight championship won, and then back up to fight Canelo for the super welterweight championship. So he's, you know, alternated as far as like defending which one of those titles. And I think Canelo might be doing that same thing. So with this fight against Liam Smith, he wins that. He may actually go up against Billy Joe Saunders in his next fight for Billy Joe Saunders' WBO belt. And then maybe he'll fight Golovkin either, you know, by mid-2017 or September 2017 for all of those middleweight belts.
You know what, if that does happen for Canelo, securing the Liam Smith fight, winning that fight, and then securing the fight against Billy Joe Saunders, I would laugh my butt off. Because we already know that Triple G was presented with the opportunity to fight Saunders. I think that the narrative for that was that Triple G wanted too much money for that. But, you know, sometimes in boxing, man, you have to take less money to get a chance. You have to. And I understand that you have a belt. I understand that. You're world-renowned and recognized by name alone. I'm not saying about what he did in the ring, but at this point, everyone knows who Triple G is. But even despite that, sometimes you have to take less money to get a chance at a belt or a position or a ranking or something like that. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to swallow
mm-hmm.
your pride, be humble, and take a chance on something. And like I said, take less money. Triple G,
yeah.
He's going to be in the sport. He ain't going nowhere soon. There's no need to try to cash him out. Like, for example, when Golden Boy had Lemieux, once Lemieux got that belt and they put him in there and for the first offense against Triple G, he got beat up. I thought that was a bad decision. Lemieux's a good, solid fighter, great power, but to me, they cashed him out too fast. But like I said, with Triple G, you've got time. But like I said, if Canelo fights Saunders, I'm going to laugh. Because, like, from that point, Canelo would be able to add yet another name to his resume. I'm not saying Billy Joe Saunders is a great fighter or nothing like that.
Right.
But at this point, he has a legitimate middleweight belt that he won from Andy Lee. And going to 2017, if that happens, and they sit down at the bargaining table again with Triple G, and he has a middleweight title, man, you're probably going to be lucky to get a 60-40 split. You'll be damn lucky to get
right.
that. You know?
Right.
So,
yep.
Golovkin's team, they need to really check themselves in regards to the people that they fight. And at this point, you can't even go back and make that up. You've already fought who you fought. And at this point, when you're trying to – and now you're trying to rush Canelo into fighting you, no, it don't work like that. It does not work like that, you know, despite
nope.
the fact that he's a sense of a boxing sensation. It doesn't work like that.
Nope. And I think that's something that, you know, the Lost and his team had to learn. That's why I, you know, basically said that he was saved by this, you know. So he was basically saved by this fight here against Kell Brook, because otherwise – he wouldn't be able to, do that. You know, he wouldn't be able to, have this type of, thing here. So that's my thing on that. All right. Seems like we're getting close to the overtime. 90 seconds away here, so if you wanted to get in here for the short period of overtime, just call in at 347-237-5539 once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. As far as, like, other fights are concerned here that are coming up over the course of the year, I mean, we do have, you know, that upcoming fight between Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas. And it seems like the news now that's basically coming from this particular fight is that it's a pay-per-view fight, but HBO has chosen not to pick up this fight as a pay-per-view. And it's basically going towards, HBO Sports' overall direction as they, kind of cut costs as far as, like, what to invest in with the sport of boxing. And one of those things is that, you know, they are very limited for their pay-per-view showcases are concerned. And so now... their last pay-per-view was the light welterweight fight between Terrence Crawford and Victor Bosal. And so now all they have is a Canelo Smith fight as a pay-per-view fight. But this one here between Pac and Vargas is not going to be on HBO pay-per-view. It seems like Top Rank is going to be the ones that's going to put this up. For pay-per-view there. So you got to, like, see how, you know, people are going to be able to watch this particular fight card. Just seeing here, Terrell, what is your reaction to, you know, HBO's decision to not pick up Manny Pacquiao versus Jesse Vargas for Vargas's WBO welterweight belt?
Well, you know, that's a great topic, and you know that we talked about this here in recent memory on the show in regards to what essentially now is the decline of HBO. Now, keep in mind that HBO has been around for a long time. They've hosted many great fights. And with us said, with them being around for so long, they know how to survive in a game as being a distributor of pay-per-view fights and been hosting many different boxing series, Boxing at the Dark, Championship Series, and things like that. They've been around. But you look at the past 5 years, something like that, Richard Schaefer leaving, their president leaving, the second president leaving again, Al Heyman leaving, things like that. And that highlights the storyline of the decline of HBO Sports in regards to boxing. So, and it's almost funny. I certainly had a laugh when I read the article in regards to Bob Arum voicing his displeasure on them not wanting to carry this as a pay-per-view fight with Pacquiao and Vargas. He's like, well,
yeah,
you guys have carried him all this time. What's wrong with him now? But you know what the thing about it? Pacquiao, he needs to retire. Do I need to see him fight again? No, I don't. I don't. And I think a lot of people would agree with that same thought. Do I need to see Pacquiao fight again? And I think the resounding answer at this point would be no. We know who Pacquiao is. We know his career is. But once again,
mm-hmm.
This is about HBO Sports and boxing. And I don't want to say they're done because they've been around for so long. They've known how to survive, navigate the waters of boxing, the promoters, and things like that. They've survived the promotional wars between promoters and things like that and still have been around. But now it's looking kind of dire for them, you know, from them to not want to carry a Pacquiao pay-per-view fight. Well, and that's actually major news because Pacquiao has made them a lot of money. And for them to take this position with Pacquiao and Arum, of course, is a resounding statement. They're definitely on the decline. So we'll see where this goes, you know.
Yeah, I think that the overall issue here with Manny Pacquiao is like you said, and of course, like a couple of other callers have, you know, said over the course of, you know, this series of this show, that they really didn't want to, you know, see Pacquiao anymore. And I think that, you know, everybody kind of like built up to that, you know, eventual fight between Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. And, once that basically happened, that was, you know, basically it as far as like what else could be done. There was nobody for either one of those guys to fight. And so, you know, Floyd Mayweather knew that, you know, so he just said, so he pretty much was the one that, you know, put that six-fight package together with Showtime and, you know, went to Les Moonves and, you know, the Showtime sports director and said, hey, this is my six-fight. This is my six-fight plan. And in my six-fight plan, the only thing that I really want is for me and Manny Pacquiao to be part of that deal. It didn't matter who else was in that six-fight plan as long as Manny Pacquiao was in it. And so once that was done and he was able to get that and fight five, fight six, like I said, for the longest, fight six didn't matter. You know, he could have fought anybody. He could have fought Joe Smo from 36th Street in the Bronx, and it wouldn't have mattered. He already had the fight that he wanted. He already made more, you know, he made the money and then some with that fight against Manny Pacquiao. So with that being known, he had that six-fight deal, and his time was done, and he knew this. You know, all the people that are saying that he should fight this guy and he should fight that guy, his response to that is, what's the point? You know, he's already did what he needed to do. So with that being said, on Floyd's side, Manny's side, he's, you know, fought everybody too. I mean, he's, you know, he fought basically the same guys that Floyd fought, Miguel Cotto, with the exception of Antonio Margarito. He fought Miguel Cotto. He fought Ricky Hatton. He's fought Shane Mosley. Once, you know, he was able to fight Floyd Mayweather, and all those fans that wanted him to fight Floyd Mayweather and wanted him to beat Floyd Mayweather, they were all disappointed that Manny Pacquiao lost. So, you know, once that happened, there wasn't really anybody else for him to fight. But the difference is that Floyd Mayweather controls his career. Manny Pacquiao doesn't control his. And so Bob Arum still has him under contract until the end of next year. You had that fight against him and Timothy Bradley, and now you had this fight here against Jesse Barbius with the top-ranked welterweight, WBO welterweight championship on the line. And so there will be other, you know, particular fights that Manny Pacquiao will be in until his contract is up. And, of course, you know, the whole backstory with Manny Pacquiao is that he don't have no money, man. So we need some money, man.
You know what? It's like, for me, for today's show, a big thought process is matchmaking. And I'm going to ask you a question. What if Pacquiao would have went ahead and signed and fought Crawford last year? And think about that. If he would have fought Crawford, would he be in the position that he's in right now? Win, lose, or draw with Crawford? And my quick answer would be no. If he would have won fought Crawford instead of fighting Bradley, his star was still been on the rise, and he would not be in the position that he's in right now. Because he fought Bradley, was that the second fight or whatever it was, second, third fight, got the win again. Yeah, third fight. No doubt about that. We know that. But, I mean, I know I said on the show, I didn't care to see that fight. I don't want to see the fight. You know, I'll
right.
read about it, but it wasn't in high demand for me. But going back to that, matchmaking. I mean, look at somebody like Mayweather. I mean, he fought Pacquiao on his own terms, and when he wanted to fight him, instead of being, quote-unquote, in the prime of both their careers when people wanted them to fight. But look at matchmaking. And once again, look at Triple G, the same thought process. Matchmaking. It's coming back to bite him in the ass, you know. Now he's out of position and he cannot properly negotiate for a fight with Triple G. And go for Triple G. I'm sorry, Canelo. Matchmaking.
Canelo.
His resume rings out. But even back to Pacquiao, I think that he would have fought Crawford last year, he would be in a much better position than he is right now. And now it's kind of like got Bob Arum searching for Saints going to dispute a pay-per-view himself, which, you know he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to incur those costs. That's what the network is for, you know. I'm sure he has the know-how, but he does not want to incur those costs. But now they're left searching for a dance partner for distribution. So, once again, matchmaking is so important in boxing. Not just who you fight, but when you fight them, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that was a good point, bringing up the thing with, that potential fight that could have happened between Manny Pacquiao and Terrence Crawford. There was, there's been two separate occasions where that fight could have taken place, like you said, over in January, where, you know, Manny Pacquiao fought Timothy Bradley, and then now, here upcoming in November, Manny Pacquiao fighting Jesse Vargas. And to me, I think that's a double-headed sword, man. If you look at the history of Bob Arum, in the case of, you know, guys like, I would say, Shane Mosley and Floyd Mayweather, he's never really put those guys at the top of his stable. It's always been somebody else. It's always been an Oscar De La Hoya, or I don't know if Fernando Vargas was. I don't think Fernando Vargas was under him, but let's just say Fernando Vargas, you know, a Manny Pacquiao, a Nonito Donaire, somebody else. And You know, he basically said it straight up in an interview in reference to Floyd when he was saying that, you know, guys, these fans don't like guys that are all defense and, you know, slick and defensive and things like that. Well, Floyd Mayweather wasn't really all defense when he was with Top Rank. And that was evidently shown against Diego Corrales. So, I mean, he knew how good Floyd Mayweather was, but he just didn't want Floyd Mayweather to be the top guy. And so now, fast forward to today, you have Terrence Crawford, who is probably the most talented fighter that he has in the stable, and yet again, he won't let Terrence Crawford be the top guy to be the number one showcase guy or a guy to pass the torch over to, because we know that Terrence Crawford has the potential to defeat Manny Pacquiao right now, and that was evidenced by his fight against Victor Postol, which is kind of notable because Victor Postol is trained by Freddie Roach, who trains Manny Pacquiao. So, and Freddie Roach said, you know, right after that fight, that Manny Pacquiao isn't ready to fight somebody the likes of Terrence Crawford. And Bob Arum just said, oh, okay, well, he can't really fight Terrence Crawford, so he won't fight Terrence Crawford. And so there you put in Jesse Vargas. And so now that's what we have in November. And it's just unknown what Manny Pacquiao is going to do until the end of his contract at the end of 2017.
Well, just once again, the question I need to ask, do you need to see Pacquiao fight it? Me personally, I don't. I mean, he's done more than enough. He secures his legacy, and we know who he is, so I don't think he needs to fight again. And, I mean, at this point, he's ascended back in the Philippines. More than enough things to do in his life and things of importance to do for his own people. Then, you know, so you don't need boxing. If you can train, that's fine. You can stay involved in sport and other means like Mayweather. I'm not saying he's going to become a major promoter or nothing like that, but nevertheless, don't need to fight again. He's done more than enough. And I think at this point, he should move on.
Well, you're talking about in reference to Manny Pacquiao, right?
Right.
I think he had recently. I think he had some type of fight card over in the Philippines where he was the main promoter. I don't know how, you know, that turned out, but I don't know what else can come of that because I mean, all he is, you know, Manny Pacquiao, and of course he's, you know, kind of like limited in his English. So it's like, hey, I'm Manny Pacquiao, and they like, and I think I won the fight. He could move, and he could run. Now, you know, something like that. But you know, I don't know what else he can do because, like I said, he's been having money issues. One, and then two, you know, he's still, you know, trying to be a senator. He's multitasking there in that instance.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's confirmed that he has money issues, but it's almost unbelievable. But, of course, when you look back quickly in history, you look at someone like Tyson, who blew through so much money through mismanagement, through waste, fraud, and abuse, and stuff like that. Yeah, it's definitely possible. But, I mean, I don't know Manny's prize fight number as far as money he's earned, but wow. It's almost like with so many examples before you, how can you go through the same thing somebody else has done and blow money like that? It's almost unbelievable. It's almost like stupidity. That's what you call it, like you see it, you know. So if he's still fighting and trying to get the money, it's a shame. And like I said, he can still secure up. He can get behind Filipino boxers. I mean, we obviously have talent that comes from the Philippines, looking at Nonito Donaire. There's other fighters that he can get behind and groom. I mean, look what Floyd's doing. He's retired. Went to the recent Olympics to basically recruit down there and everything. So you can certainly use your position, name, and leverage to get behind fighters and still be close to the sport, right in the sport. Just because you're not fighting no more, I mean, you're done in boxing. So So you had to find ways to reinvent yourself. I mean, look at De La Hoya, went from a great fighter to producing Golden Boy Promotions, who's been a mainstay and a main player in boxing within the last 15 to 20 years. So there's ways to stay in boxing. You just have to be business savvy in order to stay in boxing. You know, just because you're fighting, because no one's going to fight forever. Even though we see so many circumstances in which people fight past their primes and stuff like that, just to stay in boxing. Roy Jones Jr., Bernard Hopkins, the list goes on. Even George Foreman, people like that. But even for Foreman himself, he's not necessarily in boxing per se, but he stayed relevant with his ventures outside of boxing. But very interesting. And it's almost like laughable with the disgust that Aram has now with his current situation. And I say, don't blame nobody but yourself. No one but yourself.
Right, exactly. All right, on that note, I'm pretty much going to close out this weekend show. We'll be looking forward to the fights coming up starting on Friday night going into Saturday, and we'll be discussing them all on next Sunday night. Of course, be on the lookout for the sister shows here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel, the Cold Truth on Sports Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m., and the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. And like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to send and trade. On that note, I am out. Have a good extended weekend, folks.
You too.